and leather knapsack, and Link grabbed a torch from the wall of the tunnel. They were ready to follow me into the great unknown. But instead, we stood there, staring at each other. Well? Liv looked at me expectantly. It's not rocket science. You either know the way, or you...
Shh! Give him a second.
Link clamped his hand over Liv's mouth.
Use the Force, young Skywalker.
This wayward thing apparently carried some weight. They actually thought I knew where to go, which only left one problem. I didn't.
This way.
I was going to have to make it up as I went along. Marion said the Castor tunnels were endless, a world beneath our own, but I never really understood what she meant until now. As we turned the first corner, the passage changed, narrowing into damper and darker circular walls that felt more like a tube than a tunnel. I pressed against the walls to push myself forward, and my torch fell in the mud.
Crap.
I gripped the torch's wooden handle between my teeth and kept going.
This sucks,
Link was muttering behind me as his torch burned out. Liv was behind him.
Mine's out too.
We were in complete darkness. The ceiling was so low we had to duck beneath the muddy rock.
This is really freaking me out.
Link had never liked the dark. Liv called out from behind us.
Eventually you're going to reach the...
I hit my head against something hard and splintery in the darkness.
Ouch!
Doorwell.
Link must have pulled his flashlight out of his pocket because a flickering circle of light hit the round door in front of me. It was some kind of cold metal, not the splintering wood or crumbling stone of the other doors we'd seen. It looked more like a manhole cover in the wall. I pushed my shoulder against it, but it didn't budge.
What now?
I called back to Liv, my stand-in for Marion on all Castor-related issues. I heard her flipping pages in her notebook.
I don't know. Maybe push harder?
You had to check your little book for that?
I was annoyed.
You want me to crawl up there and do it for you?
Liv wasn't happy either.
Come on, kids. I'll push Ethan, you push me, Ethan pushes the door.
Brilliant, Liv said.
Shoulder to shoulder, MJ.
Excuse me?
Marion Jr., you're the one who wanted an adventure. You got a better idea?
The door had no handle or valve. It fit into a perfect seam, a circle of metal in a circular doorway. Not even a slit of light escaped through the cracks.
Link's right. We don't have a choice, and we're not going back now.
I wedged my shoulder against the door.
One, two, three, push!
When the tips of my fingers touched the door, it swung open as if my skin was somehow the genetic recognition, the key that opened the door. Link smashed into me, and Liv tumbled on top of both of us. I cracked my head against what felt like stone as I hit the ground. I felt so dizzy, I couldn't see anything. When I opened my eyes, I was staring up at a street lamp.
What happened?
Link sounded as disoriented as I was. I felt around the edge of the stones with my fingertips. Cobblestones.
I just touched the door and it opened.
Amazing. Liv stood up, taking it all in. I was lying in a city street that looked like London or an old town right out of a history book. Behind me, I could see the round doorway at the road's end. There was a brass street sign next to it that said, Western Doorwell, Central Library. Link sat up next to me, rubbing his head.
Holy crap! This is like one of those alleys where people got hacked up by Jack the Ripper.
He was right. We could have been standing in the mouth of an alley in 19th century London. The street was dark, lit by only the dim glow of a few lampposts. The alley was framed on both sides by the backs of tall brick row houses. Liv stood up and made her way down the deserted cobblestone street, looking up at an old iron street sign, The Keep. That must be the name of this particular tunnel. Unbelievable. Professor Ashcroft told me, but I never imagined. I suppose books couldn't really do it justice, could they?
Yeah, it looks nothing like the postcards.
Link pulled himself to his feet.
All I want to know is, where'd the ceiling go?
The curved arch of the tunnel's ceiling was gone, and in its place was a dark evening sky, as big and real and full of stars as any sky I'd ever seen. Liv pulled out her notebook and started writing.
Don't you get it? These are Casta tunnels. They're not some supernatural subway system, so Castas can creep around under Gatlin borrowing library books.
Then what are they?
I ran my hand along the rough brick on the side of the nearest building.
More like roads to another world. Or, in a way, a whole world all to themselves.
I heard something, and my heart jumped. I thought Lena was Kelting, reconnecting with me. But I was wrong. It was music.
Do you hear that?
Link asked. I was relieved. For once, the music wasn't coming from inside my head. It was coming from the end of the alley. It sounded like the Castor music from the party at Ravenwood last Halloween, the night I saved Lena from Seraphine's psychic attack. I listened for Lena, felt for her, remembering that night. Nothing. Liv checked her selenometer and wrote something else in her notebook.
Carmen, I was transcribing one yesterday.
English, please.
Link was still staring up at the sky, trying to figure it all out.
Sorry, it means charmed song. It's Casta music.
I took off, following the sound down the alley.
Whatever it is, it's coming from down here.
Marion had been right. It was one thing to wander through the damp tunnels of the Lunae Libri, but this was something entirely different. We had no idea what we had gotten ourselves into. I already knew that much. As I walked down the alley, the music grew louder. The cobblestones smoothed their way into asphalt beneath my feet, and the street changed from old-world London to modern-day slum. It was a street you could find in any big city, in some forgotten, run-down neighborhood. The buildings looked like abandoned warehouses. Iron grating covered the shattered windows, and the remnants of broken signs blinked fluorescent light into the darkness. There were cigarette butts and trash all over the street, and a strange sort of Castor graffiti, symbols I couldn't begin to understand, on the sides of the buildings. I pointed it out to Liv.
Do you know what any of that means?
She shook her head.
No. I've never seen anything like it, but it means something. Every symbol in the Casta world has significance.
This place is even freakier than the Lunae Libri.
Link was trying to play it cool in front of Liv, but he was having a hard time pulling it off.
Do you want to go back?
I wanted to give him an out, but I knew he had as much of a reason to be down here as I did. His reason was just blonder.
Are you calling me a wuss?
Shh! Shut up!
I heard it. The Castor music drifted through the air, the seductive melody replaced by something else. This time, I was the only one who could hear the words.
17 moons, 17 fears, pain of death and shame of tears, find the marker, walk the mile, 17 knows just exile.
I hear it. We must be close.
I followed the song as it looped over and over in my head. Link looked at me like I was crazy.
Hear what?
Nothing. Just follow me. The huge metal doors lining the filthy street were all the same, dented and scratched, as if they'd been attacked by an enormous animal, or something worse. Except for the last door, the one with 17 moons playing inside. It was painted black and covered with more caster graffiti, but one of the symbols looked different, and it wasn't spray-painted on the door. It was carved into it. I ran my fingers over the cuts in the wood.
This one looks different, almost Celtic.
Liv's voice was a whisper.
Not Celtic, Nyadic. It's an ancient caster language. A lot of the older scrolls in the Lunae Libri are written in it.
What does it say?
She examined the symbol carefully.
Nyadic doesn't translate directly into words. I mean, you can't think about the words as words, not exactly. This symbol means place or moment, either in physical space or time.
She ran her finger over a slash in the wood.
But this line cuts through it, see? So now the place becomes a lack of place, a no place.
How can a place be a no place? You're either in a place or you're not.
But as I said it, I knew it wasn't true. I had been in a no place for months now, and so had Lena. She looked up at me.
I think it says something like, exile.
17 knows just exile.
That's exactly what it says.
Liv gave me a strange look.
You can't know that. Or do you suddenly speak Nyadic?
She had a gleam in her eye, as if this was further proof I might be a wayward.
I heard it in a song.
I reached for the door, but Liv grabbed my arm.
Ethan, this isn't a game. This isn't the pie-baking contest at the county fair. You're not in Gatlin anymore. There are dangerous things down here. Creatures far more deadly than Ridley and her lollipops.
I knew she was trying to scare me, but it wasn't working. Since the night of Lena's birthday, I knew more about the dangers of the caster world than any librarian could, keeper or not. I didn't blame her for being afraid. You would have to be stupid not to be. Like me.
You're right. It's not the library. I'll understand if you guys don't want to go in there, but I have to. Lena's here, somewhere.
Link pushed open the door and walked in like it was the Jackson High locker room.
Whatever. I'm into dangerous creatures.
I shrugged and followed him. Liv tightened her hand around the strap of her knapsack, ready to swing it at someone's head if necessary. She took a tentative step, and the door closed behind her. Inside, it was even darker than on the street. Huge crystal chandeliers, completely out of place among the exposed pipes overhead, provided the only light. The rest of the room was pure industrial rave. It was one gigantic space with circular booths covered in dark red velvet scattered around the perimeter. Some were surrounded by heavy drapes attached to tracks in the ceiling so they could be closed around the booth, the way the curtains close around hospital beds. There was a bar in the back in front of a round chrome door with a handle. Link spotted it too.
Is that what I think it is?
I nodded. A vault. The weird chandeliers, the bar that looked more like a counter, the huge windows covered haphazardly with black tape, the vault. This place could have been a bank once, if casters had banks. I wondered what they had kept behind that door. Or maybe I didn't want to know. But nothing was weirder than the people, or whatever they were. The crowd surged and receded like one of Macon's parties, where time seemed to fade in and out depending on where you looked. From turn-of-the-century suited gentlemen who looked like Mark Twain, with stiff white-winged collars and striped silk ties, to goth-looking leather-clad punks They were all drinking, dancing, and mingling.
Dude, tell me those creepy-looking see-through people aren't ghosts.
Link backed away from one hazy figure, nearly stepping into another. I didn't want to tell him that's exactly what they were. They looked like Genevieve in the graveyard, partially materialized, only here there were at least a dozen of them. But we had never seen Genevieve move. These ghosts weren't floating around like the ones in cartoons. They were walking, dancing, moving like normal people, except they were doing it above the ground. The same pace and even strides, but their feet weren't touching the floor. One glanced our way and raised an empty glass from the table as if offering a toast.
Am I seeing things, or did that ghost pick up a glass?
Link elbowed Liv. She stepped between us, her hair brushing against my neck. Her voice was so quiet we had to lean in to hear her.
Technically, they aren't called ghosts. They're Shears, souls who haven't been able to cross over to the other world because they have unfinished business in the caster or mortal world. I have no idea why there are so many out tonight. They usually keep to themselves. Something's off.
Everything about this place is off.
Link was still watching the Shear with the glass.
And you didn't answer the question.
Yes, they can pick up anything they want. How do you think they slam doors and move furniture in haunted houses?
I wasn't interested in haunted houses.
What kind of unfinished business?
I knew enough dead people with unfinished business. I didn't want to meet any more tonight.
Something they left unresolved when they died. A powerful curse, a lost love, a shattered destiny. Use your imagination.
I thought about Genevieve and the locket and wondered how many lost secrets, how much unfinished business there was in the graveyards and cemeteries of Gatlin. Link stared at a beautiful girl with elaborate markings around her neck. They looked similar to the ones inked on Ridley and John.
I'd like to have some unfinished business with her.
She'd like it too. She would have you jumping off a cliff in no time.
I scanned the room. There was no sign of Lena. The more I looked around, the more I was grateful for the darkness. The booths were filling up with couples, drinking and making out, while the dance floor was packed with girls, spinning and turning like they were weaving some kind of web. 17 Moons wasn't playing anymore, if it was ever playing at all. Now the music was harder, more intense, a caster version of 9 Inch Nails. The girls were all dressed differently, one in a medieval gown, another in skin-tight leather. Then there were the Ridleys, girls in miniskirts and black tank tops, with red, blue, or violet streaks in their hair, sliding around one another, spinning a different kind of web. Maybe they were all sirens. I couldn't tell. But they were all beautiful, and they all had some version of Ridley's dark tattoo.
Let's check in the back.
I let Link go ahead so Liv could walk between us, even though she was checking out every corner of the club as if she wanted to remember it all. I knew she was nervous. This was no place for a mortal girl, or a mortal guy, and I felt responsible for dragging Link and Liv into this. We kept close to the wall, circling the perimeter, but it was crowded, and I felt my shoulder bump against someone. Someone with a body, I guess.
Sorry, I said instinctively.
No problem.
The guy stopped, noticing Liv.
Quite the opposite.
He winked at her.
You lost? He smiled, his shiny black eyes gleaming in the darkness. She froze. The red liquid swirled in his glass as he leaned closer. Liv cleared her throat.
No, I'm fine, thanks. Just looking for a friend.
I'll be your friend. He smiled. His white teeth were unnaturally bright in the dim light of the club.
Different sort of friend, I'm afraid.
I could see Liv's hand shaking where it held the strap of her knapsack. If you find her, I'll be over here. He turned back to the bar, where incubuses were lined up to refill their glasses with red liquid from a strange glass tap. I tried not to think about it. Link pulled us against one of the velvet curtains on the wall.
I'm starting to get the feeling this was a bad idea.
When did you come to this brilliant conclusion? Liv's sarcasm was lost on Link.
I don't know. Right about the time I saw that dude's drink, which I'm guessing wasn't punch.
Link glanced around the room.
How do we even know if they're here, man?
They're here. Lena had to be here. I was about to tell Link about how I'd heard the song and could sense she was here, when a stripe of pink and blonde hair spun onto the dance floor. Ridley. When she saw us, she stopped spinning, and I could see across the dance floor behind her. John Breed was dancing with a girl, her arms wrapped around his neck and his hands resting on her hips. Their bodies were pressed against each other, and they seemed to be in their own world. At least, that's how it felt when my hands were resting on those hips. My hands balled into fists, and my stomach lurched. I knew it was her, even before I saw the black curls.
Lena? Ethan?
June 15th. Vexed.
It's not what you think.
What do I think? She pushed John away as I crossed the dance floor. He turned around, his eyes black and menacing. Then he smiled to let me know I wasn't a threat. He knew I was no match for him physically, and after seeing him and Lena on the dance floor together, I bet he didn't consider me any other kind of threat anymore. What did I think? I knew I was in the moment before the thing happens, the thing that changes your life forever. It was like time stopped, even though everything around me was still moving. The thing I had dreaded for months was actually happening. Lena was slipping through my fingers. And it wasn't because of her birthday, or her mother and hunting, or any curse or caste or attack. It was another guy.
Ethan, you have to go.
I'm not going anywhere. Ridley stepped in front of me, the dancers swelling around us.
Slow down, boyfriend. I knew you had guts, but this is crazy.
She sounded concerned, like she actually gave a crap about what happened to me. It was a lie, like everything else about her.
Get out of my way, Ridley. You're done here, short straw. Sorry, the lollipops don't work on me, or whatever you and John are using to manipulate Lena.
She grabbed my arm, her icy fingers cutting into my skin. I had forgotten how strong she was, and how cold. She lowered her voice.
Don't be stupid. You're way out of your league, and way out of your mind.
You should know. She tightened her grip on my arm.
You don't want to do this. You shouldn't be in here. Go home before...
Before what? Before you cause even more trouble than usual?
Link caught up to me. Ridley locked eyes with him. For a second, I thought there was a flutter, the slightest spark in her eye, like the sight of Link called up something almost human in her, something that made her as vulnerable as he was. It disappeared as quickly as it had surfaced. Ridley was rattled and starting to panic. I could tell by the way she was unwrapping a lollipop before she could even get the words out of her mouth.
What the hell are you doing here? Get out of here now and take him with you.
The playful tone was gone.
Go!
She shoved us both as hard as she could. I stood my ground.
I'm not going until I talk to Lena. She doesn't want you here.
She'll have to tell me that herself.
Say it to my face, El.
Lena was winding her way through the crowd. John Breed hung back, his eyes fixed on us. I didn't want to imagine what she must have said to him to keep him there. that she would handle this? It was nothing, just a guy who couldn't get over her? Some desperate mortal who couldn't compete with everything she had now? Like him. She had John, and he had me beat in the only way that counted. He was part of her world.
I'm not leaving unless you say it.
Ridley dropped her voice, more serious than I'd ever seen her.
We don't have time to screw around. I know you're bent out of shape, but you don't understand. He'll kill you, and if you're lucky, the rest of them won't join in for fun. Who? Vampire Boy? We can take him.
Link was lying, but there was no way he wouldn't go down swinging, either for me or for her. Ridley shook her head, pushing him farther back.
You can't, you idiot. This is no place for a couple of Boy Scouts. Get out of here.
She reached for Link's cheek, but he grabbed her wrist before she could touch him. Ridley was like a beautiful snake. You couldn't let her get close without the risk of being bitten. Lena was only a few feet away.
If you don't want me here, tell me yourself.
Part of me believed if we were close enough, I could break whatever hold Ridley and John had over her. Lena stopped behind Ridley. Her expression was unreadable, but I could see the silvery streak where a single tear had fallen.
Say it, El. Say it, or come with me.
Lena's eyes flickered, and she looked past me to where Liv was standing at the edge of the dance floor.
Lena, you shouldn't be here. I don't know what Ridley and John are doing to you. No one is doing anything to me, and I'm not the one in danger here. I'm not a mortal.
Lena looked over at Liv.
Like her.
Lena's face darkened, and I could see her stray curls beginning to twist.
You're not like them either, El.
The lights in the bar flickered, and the bulbs shattered over the dance floor, sending sparks and tiny pieces of glass over both of us. The crowd, even that crowd, started moving away from us.
You're wrong. I am like them. This is where I belong. Lena, we can figure this out.
No, we can't, Ethan. Not this.
Haven't we made it through everything else together?
No, not together. You don't know anything about me anymore. For a second, something passed across her face. Sadness, maybe? Regret?
I wish things could be different, but they can't.
She started to walk away.
I can't go where you're going, Lena. I know. You'll be all alone.
She didn't turn around.
I'm already alone, Ethan. Then tell me to go, if that's what you really want.
She stopped walking and turned slowly to look at me.
I don't want you here, Ethan.
Lena disappeared across the dance floor, away from me. Before I could take a step, I heard the rip. John Breed materialized in front of me, black leather jacket and all.
Me neither.
We were only a few feet apart. I'm going, but it's not because of you. He smiled and his green eyes glowed. I turned and pushed my way through the crowd. I didn't care if I pissed off someone who could drink my blood or make me jump off a cliff. I kept moving because more than anything else, I wanted to get out of there. The heavy wooden door slammed behind me, shutting out the music, the lights, and the casters. But it didn't shut out what I was hoping for. The image of his hands on her hips, swaying to the music, her twisting black hair. Lena in the arms of some other guy. I barely noticed as the alley turned from modern-day asphalt and filth back to cobblestones. How long had it been going on, and what had happened between them? Casters and mortals can't be together. That's what the visions were telling me, as if the caster world didn't think I understood by now. I heard the sound of footsteps echoing against the cobblestones behind me.
Ethan, are you okay?
Liv put her hand on my shoulder. I hadn't realized she was following me. I turned around, but I didn't know what to say. I was standing on a street out of the past in an underground caster tunnel, thinking about Lena with some guy who was my polar opposite, a guy who could take whatever I had whenever he wanted. Tonight had proven it. I don't know what to do. This isn't Lena. Ridley and John have some kind of hold on her. Liv bit her bottom lip nervously.
I know it's not what you want to hear, but Lena's making her own decisions.
Liv didn't understand. She had never seen what Lena was really like before Macon died and John Breed showed up.
There's no way you can be sure. You heard Aunt Marion. We don't know what kind of powers John has.
I can't imagine how hard this is for you.
Liv was speaking in absolutes, and there was nothing absolute about what was happening to Lena and to me.
You don't know her.
Liv's voice dropped to a whisper.
Ethan, her eyes are gold.
The words echoed in my head, like I was underwater. My emotions sank like a stone, as logic and reason fought their way to the surface. Her eyes are gold. It was such a small detail, but it meant everything. No one could force her to go dark or make her eyes turn gold. Lena wasn't being controlled. No one was using the power of persuasion to manipulate her into jumping onto the back of John's bike. No one was forcing her to be with him. She was making her own choices, and she was choosing him. I don't want you here, Ethan. I heard the words over and over, which wasn't even the worst part. She meant them. Everything felt hazy and slow, like none of this could really be happening. Liv's face was full of concern as she stared up at me with her blue eyes. There was something soothing about their blueness. Not the green of a light caster, or the black of an incubus, or the gold of a dark caster. She was different from Lena in the most important way. She was immortal. Liv wasn't going to go light or dark, or run off with a guy with superhuman strength who could suck your blood or steal your dreams while you slept. Liv was training to be a keeper, but even then she would still be an observer. Like me, she would never really be part of the caster world. Right then, there was nothing I wanted more than to be as far away from that world as I could get.
Ethan?
But I didn't answer her. I pushed her shiny blonde hair away from her face and leaned down, our faces only inches apart. She inhaled softly, our lips so close I could feel her breath and the scent of her skin. Like honeysuckle in the springtime. She smelled like sweet tea and old books, like she had always been here. I pulled my fingers through her hair and held it at the back of her neck. Her skin was soft and warm, like a mortal girl's. There was no electric current, no shocks. We could kiss for as long as we wanted. If we had a fight, there wouldn't be a flood or a hurricane or even a storm. I wouldn't find her on the ceiling of her bedroom. No windows would shatter. No exams would catch fire. Liv held up her face to be kissed. She wanted me. Not lemons and rosemary. Not green eyes and black hair. Blue eyes and blonde hair. I didn't realize I was kelting, reaching out for someone who wasn't there. I pulled away so fast, Liv didn't have time to react. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. Liv's voice was shaky, and she put her hand on her neck where my hands had been a moment before.
It's okay.
It wasn't. I watched the emotions play out in her eyes. Disappointment, embarrassment, regret.
It's no big deal.
She was lying. Her cheeks were flushed and she was staring at the ground.
You're upset about Lena. I get it.
Liv, Link's voice interrupted my lame attempt at an apology.
Hey, man, nice exit. Thanks for ditching me.
He pretended he was joking, but his voice was edgy.
At least your cat waited for me.
Lucille was trotting casually behind him. How did she get here? I bent down to scratch her head, and she purred. Liv didn't look at either of us.
Who knows? That cat's as crazy as your great aunt's. It was probably following you.
We started walking, and even Link could feel the weight of the silence.
So what happened back there? Was Lena with Vampire Boy or what?
I didn't want to think about it, but I could tell he was trying not to think about someone too. Ridley wasn't just under his skin. She was crawling around in there. Liv was walking a foot or so ahead of us, but she was listening.
I don't know. That's how it looked.
There was no point in trying to deny it.
The doorway should be straight ahead.
Liv held her head high and almost tripped over a cobblestone. I could see how awkward things were going to be between us. How many things could a guy screw up in one day? I had probably set some kind of record. Link put his hand on my shoulder.
I'm sorry, dude. That's real.
Liv stopped so fast neither of us noticed until Link bumped right into her.
Hey, what's up, MJ?
Link nudged Liv with his elbow playfully. But she didn't move or make a sound. Lucille froze, the hair on her back standing on end, her eyes transfixed. I followed her gaze to see what she was staring at, but I had no idea what it was. There was a shadow across the street, lurking just inside a stone archway. It was formless, a dense fog, constantly shifting in a way that gave it shape. It was wrapped in some kind of material, like a shroud or a cloak. It had no eyes, but I could tell it was watching us. Link took a step backward.
What the...
Shh, Liv hissed. Don't attract its attention.
The color drained from her face.
I think it's too late for that, I whispered.
The thing, whatever it was, shifted slightly, moving closer to the street and to us. I took her hand without thinking. It was buzzing, and I realized it wasn't her hand, but the contraption on her wrist. Every dial was spinning. Liv stared at its face, unbuckling the black plastic strap to get a better look.
I'm getting insane readings, she whispered.
I thought you made that up.
I did, she whispered again, at first.
Then what? What does it mean?
I have no idea.
She couldn't take her eyes off the device, but the black shadow shifted closer to us.
I hate to bother you when you're having so much fun with your watch, but what is that thing? A shear?
She looked up from the spinning dials, her hand shaking in mine.
I wish. It's a Vex. I've only read about them. I've never seen one, and I bloody well hoped I never would.
Fascinating. Why don't we bolt and talk about this later?
The doorwell was in sight, but Link was already turning around, willing to take his chances with the dark casters and creatures at Exile.
Don't run. Liv put her hand on Link's arm. They can travel, disappear, and materialize anywhere faster than you can blink.
Like an incubus.
She nodded.
This could explain why we saw so many shears at Exile. It's possible they were responding to some kind of disturbance in the natural order. The Vex is most likely that disturbance.
Speak English, real English.
Link was panicking.
Vexes are part of the demon world, the underground. They're the closest things to pure evil in the caster or mortal world.
Liv's voice was shaky. The Vex continued to move slightly, as if it was being blown by the wind. But it didn't come any closer. It seemed to be waiting for something.
They aren't Shears. Ghosts, as you call them. Vexes don't have a physical being, unless they possess the living. They have to be summoned from the underground by someone very powerful, for only the darkest tasks.
Hello, we're already underground.
Link didn't take his eyes off the Vex. Not the kind of underground I'm talking about.
What does it want with us?
Link risked a glance down the street, mentally calculating the distance to Exile. The Vex began to move, dissolving into mist and back into shadow again.
I think we're about to find out.
I squeezed Liv's hand, trembling in my own. The black fog, the Vex itself, thrust forward like angry open jaws, and a sound, loud and shrill, erupted from deep within. It was impossible to describe, fierce and menacing like a roar, but terrifying like a scream. Lucille hissed, her ears flattening against her head. The sound intensified, and the Vex reared back, rising above us as if it was planning to attack. I pushed Liv to the ground and tried to shield her body with mine. I covered my neck like I was about to be devoured by a grizzly bear instead of a body-snatching demon. I thought about my mom. Was this how she felt when she knew she was about to die? I thought about Lena. The scream reached a crescendo, and I heard another sound rising above it, a familiar voice. But it wasn't my mother's, or Lena's.
Dark demon of the devil, bend to our will and leave this place!
I looked up and saw them standing behind us under the lamplight. She was holding a string of beads and bone in front of her, like a crucifix, and they were gathered around her, glowing and luminous, with purpose in their eyes. Amma and the Greats. I can't explain what it was like to see Amma and four generations of the spirits of her ancestors towering above her, like the faces from old black-and-white pictures. I recognized Ivy from the visions, her dark skin gleaming, dressed in a high-necked blouse and calico skirt. But she looked more intimidating than she had in the visions, and the only one who looked fiercer stood to her right, her hand on Ivy's shoulder. She had a ring on every finger, and she was wearing a long dress that looked like it had been stitched from silk scarves, with a tiny bird embroidered on the shoulder. I was staring at Sulla the Prophet, and she made Amma look about as harmless as a Sunday school teacher. There were two other women, most likely Aunt Delilah and sister, and an old man, his face punished by the sun, standing in the back with a beard that would have put Moses to shame, Uncle Abner. I wished I had some wild turkey for him. The Greats tightened their circle around Amma, chanting the same verse again and again in Gulla, the original language of her family. Amma repeated the same verse in English, shaking the beads and bone, shouting to the heavens.
Of vengeance and wrath, bind the suspended, hasten his path.
The Vex rose even higher, the fog and shadow circling and swirling above Amma and the Greats. Its scream was deafening, but Amma didn't even flinch. She closed her eyes and raised her voice to meet the demonic cry.
Of vengeance and wrath, bind the suspended, hasten his path.
Sulla raised her bracelet-laden arm, spinning a long stick with dozens of tiny charms dangling from it, back and forth between her fingers. She took her hand from Ivy's shoulder and rested it on Amma's, her glowing, translucent skin glimmering in the darkness. The second her hand touched Amma's shoulder, the Vex let out a final, gnarled cry and was sucked into the void of the night sky. Amma turned to the Greats.
I'm much obliged.
The Greats disappeared as if they had never been there at all. It probably would have been better if I had disappeared with the Greats. because one look at Amma's face made it clear that she had only saved us so she could kill us herself. We would have had better odds against the Vex. Amma was seething, her eyes narrow and focused on her main targets, Link and me.
V-E-X-A-T-I-O-N.
She grabbed us by our collars at the same time as if she could have thrown us up the doorwell behind her with a single toss.
As in trouble, worry, agitation, botheration. Need me to go on?
We shook our heads.
Ethan Lawson Waite, Wesley Jefferson Lincoln, I don't know what business the two of you think you have down in these tunnels.
She was shaking her bony finger as she pointed at us.
You don't have a lick of sense between you, but you think you're ready to be battling dark forces.
Link tried to explain. Big mistake.
Amma, we weren't trying to battle any dark forces, honest. We were just...
Amma advanced, that finger barely an inch from Link's eyes.
Don't you tell me. When I get through with you, you're gonna wish I'd told your mama about what you were doing in my basement when you were 9 years old.
He backed up until he hit the wall behind him, next to the doorwell. Amma matched him step for step.
That story's as sad as the day is long.
Amma turned to Liv.
And you're studying to be a keeper, but you don't have any more sense than they do. Knowing what you do and still letting these boys drag you into this dangerous business, you're in a world of trouble with Marion.
Liv slunk down a few inches. Amma whipped around to face me.
And you.
She was so angry she was talking with her jaw clenched.
You think I don't know what you're up to? You think because I'm an old woman, you can fool me? It'll take you 3 lifetimes before you can sail me a raft that doesn't float. Soon as Marion told me you were down here, I found you straight away.
I didn't ask her how she'd found us. Whether it was chicken bones or tarot cards or the grates, she had her ways. Amma was the closest thing I'd ever seen to a supernatural without actually being one. I didn't look her in the eye. It was like avoiding a dog attack. Don't make eye contact. Keep your head down and your mouth shut. Instead, I kept walking, with Link looking back at Amma every few steps. Liv wandered behind us, confused. I knew she hadn't counted on a run-in with a Vex, but Amma was more than she could handle. Amma shuffled along behind us, muttering to herself or the grates. Who knew?
Think you're the only one who can find something? Don't need to be a caster to see what you fools are up to.
I could hear the bones rattling against the beads.
Why do you think they call me a seer? Because I can see the mess you're into just as soon as you're into it.
She was still shaking her head as she disappeared up the doorwell, not a speck of mud on her sleeves or a rumple in her dress. What had felt like a rabbit hole on the way down was a broad stairwell on the way up, as if it had expanded out of respect for Miss Amma herself.
Taking on a Vex, as if a day with this child wasn't trouble enough.
She sniffed with every step. It went on like that the whole way back. We dropped Liv off on our way through the tunnels, but Link and I kept walking. We didn't want to be too close to that finger or those beads. June 16th. Revelations. By the time I crawled into my bed, it was nearly sunrise. There would be even more hell to pay in the morning when Amma saw me, but I had a feeling Marion wasn't expecting me to be on time for work. She was as scared of Amma as anyone. I kicked off my shoes and fell asleep before I hit the pillow. Blinding light, I was overwhelmed by the light. Or was it the dark? I felt my eyes ache as if I had been staring at the sun too long, creating spots of darkness. All I could make out was a silhouette blocking out the light. I wasn't scared. I knew this particular shadow intimately. The slight waist, the delicate hands and fingers, every strand of hair twisting in the casting breeze. Lena stepped forward, reaching out for me. I watched, frozen, as her hands moved out of the darkness and into the light where I was standing. The light crept up her arms until it hit her waist, her shoulders, her chest.
Ethan.
Her face was still shrouded in shadow, but now her fingers were touching me, moving along my shoulders, my neck, and finally my face. I held her hand against my cheek, and it burned me, though not with heat, but cold.
I'm here, El. I loved you, Ethan, but I have to go. I know.
In the darkness, I could see her eyelids lift and the golden glow, the eyes of the curse, the eyes of a dark caster.
I loved you too, El.
I reached out my hand and gently closed her eyes. The chill of her hand disappeared from my face. I looked away and forced myself to wake up. I was prepared to face Amma's wrath when I got downstairs. My dad had gone to the Stop and Steal to get a newspaper, and it was just the two of us. The three of us, if you counted Lucille, who was staring at the dry cat food in her bowl, something she'd probably never seen before. I guess Amma was mad at her, too. Amma was at the stove, pulling out a pie. The table was set, but breakfast wasn't cooking. There were no grits or eggs, not even a piece of toast. It was worse than I thought. The last time she baked in the morning instead of making breakfast was the day after Lena's birthday, and before that, the day after my mom died. Amma needed dough like a prize fighter. Her fury could generate enough cookies to feed the Baptists and the Methodists combined. I hoped the dough had taken the brunt of it this morning. I'm sorry, Amma. I don't know what that thing wanted with us. She slammed the oven door shut, her back to me.
Of course you don't. There's a lot you don't know. But that didn't stop you from wandering around where you didn't have any business, now did it?
She picked up her mixing bowl, stirring the contents with the one-eyed menace, as if she hadn't used it to scare Ridley into submission the day before. I went down there looking for Lena. She's been hanging out with Ridley, and I think she's in trouble. Amma spun around.
You think she's in trouble? You have any idea what that thing was? The one that was about to take you out of this world and into the next?
She stirred madly. Liv said it was called a Vex, and it was summoned by someone powerful.
And dark. Someone who doesn't want you and your friends poking around in those tunnels.
Who would want to keep us out of the tunnels? Seraphine and Hunting? Why? Amma slammed the bowl on the counter.
Why? Why are you always asking so many questions about things that are none of your concern? I reckon it's my fault. I let you run me ragged with those questions when you weren't tall enough to see over this counter.
She shook her head.
But this is a fool's game. There can't be a winner.
Great. More riddles. Amma, what are you talking about? She pointed her finger at me, the same way she had last night.
You've got no business in the tunnels. You hear me? Lena's having a hard time, and I'm 10 kinds of sorry, but she's got to figure all this out for herself. There's nothing you can do, so you stay out of those tunnels. There are worse things down there than Vexes.
Amma turned back to her pie, pouring the filling from the bowl into a pie shell. The conversation was over.
You go on to work now, and keep your feet above ground.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't like lying to Amma, but technically I wasn't. At least, that's what I told myself. I was going to work, right after I stopped by Ravenwood. After last night, there was nothing left to say. And everything. I needed answers. How long had she been lying to me and sneaking around behind my back? Since the funeral? The first time I saw them together? Or the day she took the picture of his motorcycle in the graveyard? Were we talking about months, or weeks, or days? To a guy, those distinctions mattered. Until I knew, it would gnaw away at me and what little pride I had left. Because here's the thing. I heard her, inside and out. She'd said the words, and I saw her with John. I don't want you here, Ethan. It was over. The one thing I never thought we'd be. I pulled up in front of Ravenwood's twisted iron gates and turned off the engine. I sat in the car with the windows rolled up, even though it was already sweltering outside. The heat would be suffocating in a minute or two, but I couldn't move. I closed my eyes, listening to the cicadas. If I didn't get out of the car, I wouldn't have to know. I didn't have to drive through those gates at all. The key was still in the ignition. I could turn it and drive back to the library. Then none of this would be happening. I turned the key, and the radio came on. It wasn't on when I turned the car off. The Volvo's reception wasn't much better than the beater's, but I heard something buried in the static.
17 moons, 17 spheres, the moon before her time appears. Hearts will go and stars will follow. One is broken, one is hollow.
The engine died, and the music with it. I didn't understand the part about the moon, except that it was coming, which I already knew, and I didn't need the song to tell me which one of us was gone. When I finally opened the car door, the stifling Carolina heat seemed cool by comparison. The gates creaked as I slipped inside. The closer I got to the house, the sorrier it looked now that Macon was gone. It was worse than the last time I was here. I walked up the steps of the veranda, listening to each board creak under my feet. The house probably looked as bad as the garden, but I couldn't see it. Everywhere I looked, the only thing I saw was Lena. Trying to convince me to go home the first time I met Macon, sitting on the steps in her orange prison jumpsuit the week before her birthday. Part of me wanted to walk the path out to Greenbrier, to Genevieve's grave, so I could remember Lena huddled up next to me with an old Latin dictionary while we tried to make sense of the Book of Moons. But those were all ghosts now. I studied the carvings above the doorway and found the familiar Castor moon. I fingered the splintery wood on the lintel and hesitated. I wasn't sure how welcome I would be, but I pressed it anyway. The door swung open, and Aunt Del smiled up at me.
"Ethan, I was hoping you would come by before we left."
She pulled me in for a quick hug. Inside, it was dark. I noticed a mountain of suitcases by the stairs. Sheets covered most of the furniture, and the shades were drawn. It was true. They were really leaving. Lena hadn't said a word about the trip since the last day of school, and with everything else that had happened, I'd almost forgotten. At least, I wanted to. Lena hadn't even mentioned they were packing. There were a lot of things she didn't tell me anymore.
"That's why you're here, isn't it?"
Aunt Del squinted, confused.
"To say goodbye?"
As a palimpsest, she couldn't separate layers of time, so she was always a little lost. She could see everything that had happened or would happen in a room the minute she walked in, but she saw it all at once. Sometimes I wondered what she saw when I walked into this room. Maybe I didn't want to know. Yeah, I wanted to say goodbye. When are you